Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks with education curriculum pioneer Lynn Munson, CEO of Great Minds, an organization committed to developing world-class curriculum for pre-K through 12 students. A veteran of the Common Core political battles, Munson and her team of teachers believe in moving away from, quote, drill-and-kill style learning into a more holistic approach, which reflects in the curriculums developed by Great Minds. How is the global pandemic impacting curriculum? What role does the integration of modern technology play in curriculum development? Those questions and more on this episode of Podcast Ed. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
Today, I'm excited to be with Lynn Munson, who is the CEO of Great Minds, one of the great curriculum leaders in the country. So Lynn, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Doug. I'm so excited to talk.
Well, talk a little about Great Minds, just for people who don't really know exactly what you do and how you do it. I know you're the founder.
Founded it 13 years ago. It always surprises people that we are as young as we are. We create core curriculum materials that are very widely used in schools across America. Those materials are by and large based on the Common Core state standards or versions of those standards. But the thing that really ties them all together and makes them so effective is that they're knowledge-driven core curriculum materials. So they not only teach English language arts through wonderful texts of wide variety and diversity and the highest quality, they teach every skill in ELA through those texts. So it's not just reading and writing, but also grammar and vocabulary, spelling, discussion, and the rest. But we also teach mathematics as an area of knowledge and a body of knowledge, which is unique in this country. Historically, mathematics was taught very procedurally with a lot of reliance on rote memorization. Right. That's how I'm guessing, you know, you were taught. I know it's the way I was taught.
Yes, ma'am.
But we teach math as an area of knowledge, because that's what it is. And kids who learn math through Eureka Math, which is our comprehensive pre-K through 12 math curriculum, really deeply understand conceptually what's going on in mathematics. And they can go out in the world, see situations where their math skills could be used to answer questions and figure out problems and know how to draw on them. We're also working on a science curriculum that's also comprehensive called PhD Science.
So Lynn, why did you decide to take this approach? I mean, why did you decide 13 years ago that there's a serious problem that needs to be addressed in K-12 education in America, and I'm going to roll up my sleeves and tackle it?
You know, it's interesting. I didn't decide 13 years ago to create curriculum or certainly ever to sell anything to anyone. It makes our sales team roll their eyes, by the way, when I say that, but it could not be more true. We started quite simply as a research and advocacy organization out of Washington, D.C., kind of your typical D.C. mini think tank,
right?
Really focused on trying to share the research around why it's so important that all students get a comprehensive and knowledge-rich education in the liberal arts and sciences, all of them. And I would go around giving speeches along those lines. I would really preach strongly against the narrowing of the curriculum and the sidelining of history and of science and of music and the arts. We would do research reports along those lines, and people would read these or listen to me and they would say, we agree with you already. I'm a teacher. I went into teaching because I love teaching literature and I love teaching about the most exciting phenomena in science. But the way that that the big textbook companies, what they produce is all very skills-based. It's this drill and kill approach, oftentimes scripting teachers in the direct teaching of skills, completely disembodied in many cases from content. So they said, what should I use? What should I use? I want to use good curriculum. And I had very few suggestions for them. And many of them were kind of artisanal programs that may be adopted like an international baccalaureate. Great program,
right.
But might be adopted in some schools and not likely in others. It became clear that there was a need, a real need that had to be addressed, and that we at least had the thinking, if not yet the experience, that we needed to do a good job addressing the problem.
So paint a picture for me. what's the difference between a knowledge-based curriculum and a skill-based curriculum? How does that show up differently in the classroom with a child and a teacher?
Yeah, a knowledge-based curriculum will also be teaching skills. Skills are essential, of course, writing skills, for example. And I think that's a nice one, actually, to illustrate. If you're teaching writing through knowledge, you're reading a wonderful, wonderful book. You're dissecting it with your classmates. And you're thinking about writer's craft and all the decisions that a writer has made in the process of choosing words, shaping characters, storylines, and the rest. And then you're writing about that. And you're pulling evidence from the book constantly to support your point. Right. If you're learning how to write in a way that's disembodied from knowledge, you're typically kind of taught some kind of process that, you know, that is said will apply in any situation. And then oftentimes you're told, oh, you just choose what you want to write about, or maybe write an opinion essay, but not a particular topic and no particular expectations around either evidence or the quality of evidence that's going to be presented. And everyone writes on something different in class. Oftentimes they're not writing on something that's knowledge building. One of the classic examples is write an opinion about whether you should have to wear uniforms at school, something like this.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And while you're cultivating some kind of a writing skill, you're not cultivating it in a way where it's going to stick with you.
Right.
If you do it through the knowledge-based approach, you're so enthusiastic and engaged around what you're deeply learning and actively thinking about that, that the skill is really getting implanted a lot more thoroughly and permanently than it would otherwise.
Talk to me about results. We're obviously in a results-driven business. Is there any research or empirical or anecdotal experiences you had that would say this is really working?
There's so much. There's a tremendous amount. And I'll tell you, rather than run down a bunch of numbers, which can be found on our website, greatminds.org, we have a lot of just little data stories, we call them, out of districts and schools that have contacted us. And they're so thrilled with the impact that they say our materials have had on students that they share these and then we share them out with the field. But what we hear time and again is teachers use our materials, they start seeing the impact rather early, for example, in terms of the level of math conversation that kids are able to have and are excited about having about how mathematics is working. And they will start seeing the results on tests that are just head turning. And they will say to us, we never were so embarrassed. We never thought that our students were capable of this level of performance.
Right.
They say it time and again. And, you know, we feel for them. And it's not their fault because A, in their school of education, they're most likely didn't learn anything about the subjects, which they were then made responsible for teaching. And B, they were probably never provided with curriculum materials that supported high quality instruction in the past. So it's logical. But I'm telling you, we have this conversation time and again, every part of the country.
What's the pushback? Why aren't school districts all over the country just jumping? I know a lot of them are, by the way, certainly in Florida. What's the argument against doing this?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always hard to change practice. It's hard to change processes. Yeah. You know, our school districts are public institutions. I know your audience in particular has a keen kind of understanding of the challenges that could be presented there. There's a shocking amount of change going on. So I feel like there's a lot of hope out there. And I think that by and large, it's simply the momentum of having done things a different way for so long that is our greatest enemy.
Talk to me about teacher training and challenges in that area, because you mentioned a lot of us were trained in a sort of a skills-oriented approach, and now suddenly, you know, there's a whole different kind of a way of thinking about teaching. How are you guys thinking about preparing teachers to teach a much more knowledge-rich curriculum?
You know, it is a big deal. It is not the way, in almost all cases, that anyone was taught to teach in schools of education. Fixing that problem, of course, would be essential and incredibly helpful to anyone wanting to go into teaching today. I will tell you that our PD, or as we call it, our professional development offerings, which are really quite extensive. Educators are always shocked. They assume that, you know, the experience that they've had thus far is typically from big textbook companies. The PD is some kind of a how to use the product kind of thing. And oftentimes it's delivered by someone who is at least a part-time salesperson, looking to see if there is the opportunity to sell more. RPD is absolutely nothing like that. You're going to come, you're going to learn either a lot about English, a lot about science, or a lot about math. Right. Almost certainly something you did not know before. While you are learning the best, most research-based methods for how to teach those subjects. They're incredibly meaty. Districts and schools become very attached to our trainers. They want the same people coming back every time. Some of these folks really get an incredible following. And I'm so proud of them, because the people who write and train on our materials are the absolute stars, the absolute gold that we have at Great Minds. Great Minds would be nowhere if it wasn't for the teachers who have gravitated to it to make us who we are. More than 75% of our employees are teachers or have been teachers.
Well, that speaks to what you've built. To do this in just 13 years is pretty amazing, Lynn. So my congratulations. You mentioned earlier Common Core. As you know, there's been all kinds of politics around the Common Core. How have you had to navigate those politics, and how has that affected your ability to roll out a knowledge-based curriculum?
Mm-hmm. Well, even though we've grown and we are at over 900 employees now, that is still really, really small in the instructional materials industry, and we're able to be very nimble. In fact, one of my obsessions as CEO every day is to protect our nimbleness as we grow. It is true that all of our materials originally were based on the Common Core state standards, and many of our materials, of course, still are. But we are also able, in some cases, to do editions of our work that that incorporate the standards in other states. We're creating a Virginia edition right now, for example, and we're in talks with some other states to do the same. The battles over the Common Core obviously were a huge distraction. Right. You're going to laugh when I tell you this. Maybe you don't know this. Our original name was Common Core.
Really?
That's what I named the organization originally. We own commoncore.org, the domain. And I'll tell you why I named it that. So I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. And while my mother wouldn't let me go to the University of Chicago, I was an admirer of it. And I noticed that their general education requirements, which were quite famous, were called the Common Core, the education that all undergraduates at the University of Chicago were required to take. Right. I mean, if you look at it, it's just a marvelous group of courses. And, you know, of course, not all kids, like I was not able to, are going to have a chance to go have that experience. But I thought to myself, that is the kind of knowledge that I think all kids in America, as they're graduating from high school, should be prepared to indulge in and prepared to appreciate. And so in addition to, of course, you know, the words kind of sounding nice together, they had that particular meaning for me and called the organization Common Core. We had to give up the name because the distraction of everything around the standards became too great, and trying to explain it to people all the time became silly. Yeah. And we switched to Great Minds.
Well, the University of Chicago has this history of great books. I keep thinking, you were talking, Robert Hutchins, right, was the president who was a big advocate of sort of a great books curriculum.
And who established all of that, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very much what we're talking about with the Common Core.
Yeah. So we're in obviously a bizarre time in history, Lynn, with the pandemic. Everybody homeschooled, you know, instantly this spring. We'll probably have a very hybrid kind of model in the fall where open, closed, it's going to be all over the place. How has that affected the rollout of the curriculum? How have you tried to prepare how you guys have interacted with school districts with what's going to happen in the fall? How's that affected your work?
It's affected it a lot. I think largely in very positive ways. When we first started hearing from school districts that use our materials in early March, that they were going to be closing their doors and sending kids home, we said, what is the best possible thing that we can do to help right now? And we decided, because we're teachers and can understand the position that other educators are in very easily, and because we have within our staff those talents in abundance, the talent of teaching, we said, let's simply do the most we can to support continuous coherent learning for kids who are using Eureka Math and Wit and Wisdom and PhD Science. And so we stood up what we call Knowledge on the Go, which was a series of daily lessons. We launched these right around March 20th. I remember, it's my birthday. I'm so excited about it. And we launched these lessons, and every day we published, I believe it was online, 28 video lessons.
Wow.
That kids could sit and take. They could do the problems along with our teachers. They could do the additional classwork if they wanted afterwards. It was really as close as one could get to the full classroom experience, but at home.
Yeah.
And districts were so grateful. Many put the lessons on their public access channels that some of the larger districts have. We also put them in a PBS clearinghouse where PBS stations all around America could pull them down and put them out on their stations. What we learned from doing that, in an odd situation like the one that we're in now, where distance learning is becoming the new normal, at least for the coming year, the best thing that we can do to help is to kind of, on video, have that whole class instructional component as efficiently and effectively handled for the teacher as we can. And so we've created a new distance learning supplementary product to our core curricula. It's not a replacement, it's a supplement to address this situation that includes versions of the same types of videos that we did with Knowledge on the Go. It will, of course, be the whole year, though, not just the end of the year, which is what Knowledge on the Go covers. We've paired that with at-home resources and an in-class kind of guide for teachers to use to be able to toggle as easily as possible between students who are in class and students who are at home.
Right.
It's a really flexible offering. We hope that that no matter the situation teachers find themselves in the fall, that they'll be able to use Eureka Math in sync and the other curricula also in sync to address student needs.
A lot of the technology that's been around a long time, like Zoom, which we're talking on today, is suddenly being implemented at warp 5 speed. And people are really struggling to figure out how to use technology to improve productivity in ways we never had before because, you know, we just have to now. To talk a little bit about how you guys are thinking about technology moving forward. Particularly, I've had a lot of great conversations in the last couple of months with people thinking about, you know, virtual reality, how to use virtual reality to create a more rich experience. I've had a lot of conversations with folks worried about equity because this particular pandemic has the possibility of exacerbating inequities, and how do we figure out how to use technology to offset the inequities and actually lead us towards greater equity. I'm just curious what kind of conversations you guys have been having internally about how can we use technology to make our very engaging curriculum even more engaging? How do we help, you know, use technology in partnership with our curriculum to really address some equity inequity issues?
So we think about technology a lot, and we are making a significant technology investment at Great Minds that was already underway before the pandemic. We've obviously, as I just described, tapped technology to help students and teachers in the here and now. I'll tell you, fundamentally, though, you know, our view is that the technology needs to follow, not lead.
Right.
It needs to follow what are the best instructional decisions that one needs to be making in the classroom, not co-opting
right.
the best instructional approach. So if it can follow on, so for example, if in a science curriculum, let's assume everyone's in the classroom still.
Okay.
There are experiments or investigations one could do that are not possible to do on a tabletop,
right.
but are important to expand students' understanding or deepen it of a scientific topic. And one can use virtual investigations to do that, to give you a real sense, for example, of the distance between Earth and other planets, right? Right. Things of this variety, then we're all for it. And in fact, we're very actively incorporating it in the grade 6 through 8 work that we're doing in PhD science. If obviously ebooks or different kinds of readers where you can annotate it, you know, easily and make it possible to again, be anywhere with your book, you don't have to worry about losing it, right? If you can find it through the computer, but also be able to interact with the book in a meaningful way instructionally still. You know, as you and I did with dog-earing pages and underlining and post-its when we were in school, then that's of added value. Same thing for math. I mean, you can have, there's real manipulatives that you can hold in your hand. And those are very important, particularly early on, to get a concrete understanding of mathematics. But there's also virtual ones that can perform similarly and help us in situations like the one that we find us in. So we try to be very selective. We kind of have a very curated approach to the incorporation of technology. It is important and more important every day.
The other one thing I wanted to ask you about is future curriculum. Some of your friends and colleagues have said, what about social studies? Is that something that you guys might have? There's a lot of landmines in social studies. On the other hand, it's who we are. So
I couldn't agree more. So much so that we actually years ago created something called the Alexandria Plan, which is, it's not full curriculum. The struggle here, Doug, is that there isn't a next generation science standards or Common Core or what have you for social studies. Nothing has ever been successful. And so it's a little hard to know what standards to work with, though I think there's general agreement around important topics that should be taught. So we created the Alexandria Plan a number of years ago, and it is really quite fulsome. It's based on trade books and topics in U.S. history and world history. And it contains an incredible number of lessons and activities in those two areas. And it has had some widespread use. But we have been hearing very recently, again, from some states who may be interested in coming together and working with us on something that is more comprehensive. And so we have started actively thinking about that now. Our Wit and Wisdom curriculum, by the way, incorporates a great deal of history. It also incorporates a great deal of science. I would never argue, though, I would be the last one to suggest that social studies or history, as I prefer to call it, should not, doesn't deserve its own, you know, give it as much time in the day as you like, as far as I'm concerned. I was going to say hour, but that doesn't feel like enough to me.
Yeah.
And so we could not be more interested in the possibility of creating something in history that could have widespread use.
Well, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys deal with that. It's very exciting.
Well, we'll make sure that you know about it as soon as there's something to be said.